This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, I'm Philip C, and this is the Breakfast Grill. Those good old days when you could rack up frequent flyer miles, flatbed seats, and privileged down access while sipping a glass of champagne 20,000 feet in the air. Those were the perks of business travel pre-pandemic. And very likely, your company made your travel arrangements through a travel management company like FCM Travel Solutions. But is corporate travel in a permanent coma? And as a result, will travel management companies be a relic of the past? With us today to speak about its impending resurrection, we speak to Bertrand Sailey, Managing Director at FCM Travel Solutions Asia. Welcome to The Breakfast Grill. Straight to the question on market. When do you see corporate travel rebounding back to pre-COVID levels?
Okay, first of all, I can tell you that with your introduction and talking about the glass of champagne flying high, you know, I miss that very much too, being based in Singapore. I haven't traveled in 18 months, and I'm actually waiting for the country to actually reopen so that we can enjoy the perk of traveling again. Anyway, listen, it's a very wide question, because what we can say about corporate travel in particular is that the pickup is very different depending on where you are. So, for example, if you look at China, they were the first country to come back with corporate travel back in June last year. And in January this year, our volume in China was actually higher than pre-COVID, which we thought was very encouraging, because it shows that when people feel like it's actually safe to travel, people are back on planes. And, you know, there was a lot of argument around the fact that now with, the usage of Zoom or any virtual, conferencing, people might not travel as much. What we see is that in most markets where the safety is good again, people are back on plane. So this is very encouraging. So depending on the market, then you see different trends. Malaysia, for example, we've seen actually a beginning of pickup, and then because of the new restrictions, travel tend to suffer again. So it's really linked to the different ways that we see and the restrictions that the governments come up with.
But honestly, governments take the approach, as you said, of close first, open last with respect to travel. And so really, do we expect corporate travel to rebound next year? China, that sounds like an anomaly.
If you look at the example of Europe, which I think is probably a good region to look at right now, because they have reached above 50% kind of vaccination rate around the continent, and they are definitely letting their people travel. So right now, as you know, this is summer in Europe, so this is not the best month for corporate travel. But what we've seen is a lot of booking for September, October, which is the moment where people get back to work in Europe, which seem to indicate that companies are actually now pretty okay letting their people travel. In Asia, it's a bit early, because it will really depend on how countries are going to manage the restrictions. But there is good expectation that as soon as the governments will come up with, lesser restrictions and more, people will get back on plane. And there is something also, Philip, which I think is going to be interesting to watch, is whether governments are going to have different kind of policies for business travel and leisure travel, because the destinations are not necessarily the same. As you know, for business, people most likely travel to large cities in the region where you probably can control your itinerary a bit more. We will see, but we are reasonably optimistic for a real pickup in the second half of this year and the beginning of next year in 2022.
You sound very optimistic, and my pushback to you is, do you think this resurgence is just a issue of pent-up demand? Having been quarantined and locked down for such a long time, people are just rushing out to go and reconnect and build relationships again. But with the onset of Zoom and all the different technologies you can now to engage customers, do you expect customers to still travel, but perhaps less frequently? And so the reality is perhaps you'll never ever reach back to pre-COVID levels.
Every study says that The Zooms and the Teams or the whatever you are using are here to stay. There is no doubt about that. And then, to me, this is more adding up to the opportunity to interact within the company. But business travel is happening for a reason. It's because you want to meet your customers. It's because you want to meet your suppliers. And as we know for a fact now, a lot of companies have been surviving on the interactions and relationships that they built before COVID. So they could sign those deals remotely, they could do, but now it's kind of drying up because ultimately, if you don't meet your customers, there is very little chance that you will manage to get the deal across. You know what I mean? So when you work in the financial sector, in the tech industry, you know, you need to see the people you deal with to kind of get the deals across. And I do believe that this is here to stay. So, and maybe like for some internal stuff, like for example, you do an internal training and something like that. We used to have people flying, you know, on the other side of the world. Maybe those meetings are gone, but for everything that is customer supplier interactions, and we believe that business travel is still remaining, you know, very relevant, I would say.
So let's take a different perspective and angle where you see the markets Flight Centre operates, right? Which industries are leading the way and driving travel now? You're mentioning tech and financial sector. Is that across the board?
Yes, absolutely, because they still need a lot of people to travel. You know, even now, despite the pandemic, you know, because they need to move people around, you know, they need to, you know, get developers coming in or moving to other countries or things like that. They need to recruit. We've seen, for example, a lot of Chinese companies, you know, tech companies coming to Singapore, for example, like the Tencent and all of that, the TikToks. So there is definitely a lot of demand on the technology sector. Another one is financial services because, you know, as you know, this is a big flow of money, but also people, particularly in Asia Pacific. And this is a big industry in the region, you know, between the two financial hubs of Hong Kong and Singapore. But obviously, if you had China, Japan, you know, those are like large countries when it comes to money flow. Pharmaceutical sector is obviously a big one, as you can imagine, because with all the demand right now going up when it comes to medical and, you know, pharmaceutical services or products. I would say those are the big ones right now. But, you know, literally everyone is waiting now.
So when you talk to these corporate customers, right, what are they looking for now? What do they want in their travel itineraries? Presumably flexibility is ever more important. What else are they asking for from the airlines and hotels and from other travel service providers?
So the first thing is information. Information, information. I don't think it has ever been more confusing to travel than today. And I don't think that the services that we deliver as a travel management company has ever been more relevant. Because you need to rely on a partner that can tell you, I'm going to move you from point A to point B hassle-free without you worrying about missing the right test, missing the right quarantine, haven't booked the right connecting flights or things like that. You know what I mean? Because the environment is so complex. So we are delivering more information to companies right now because, and you know, it goes near to the details, depending on your nationality, depending on your passport, depending on your vaccination status, depending on the actual vaccine that you got, the trip might be different or might look different. And we need to be on top of this so that you have the insurance that you are doing the right thing by your traveler.
But you make the case that, you know, itineraries are becoming more complex because the consumer wants more information. And that's why you guys are in the picture. But when information democratizes, when it's all readily available, why would they want to go to a TMC or travel management company like yourself? It's all available in the website. And if the itinerary or flight itinerary is quite simple from point A to point B, do they really need to talk to someone like you?
I believe they do. One, because we help. I mean, we do much more than just doing a booking, right? I mean, I think you are getting this now, but we are taking care of the entire journey. But we are also bringing to companies the opportunity to digitalize their own flow when it comes to a travel demand management. So we are coming up with very innovative technology available on mobile, on computer or tablets, where you can do your own bookings. You have an approval flow going on, which allows you to know who is traveling, at what cost, is it actually a relevant trip that you actually want to approve. So all of this is happening thanks to us. The other thing that we give to corporations is a lot of visibility on their spend to understand which airline they are booking. Are they paying a cost per mile, which is competitive versus, you know, other companies from the same industries? And how can we help them to actually save a lot of money out of their travel budget by consolidating the spend? So that's all the things we are doing with companies. It's not only doing bookings.
But the mid-sized companies, I understand, would appreciate that. But larger businesses now, those behemoths with multinationals, they probably have enough spend among themselves to build their own travel systems, right? Why would they still rely on you?
Because travel is a very specific ecosystem. And yes, what large companies do is to build systems to automate processes, but they always need to interact with third parties. And what we want to be is to be this third party that consolidates for them the access to the travel ecosystem and integrates it within their company's workflows. I spoke about approval flow. You can speak about invoices management to automate it entirely, expense management to automate it entirely, and making interaction with HR systems so that you can automatically create the traveler profiles and delete it when the employee leaves the company and things like that. So this is really what we do now, is integrating within the company ecosystem and bringing inside everything related to complicated travel things, because travel is really about interacting with hundreds of suppliers, like between the hotels, the car providers, the airports, the airlines, and we do that for them, and we make it easy, because otherwise it's almost unmanageable, to be fair.
With us today on The Breakfast Grill is Bertrand Siley, Managing Director of FCM Travel Solutions Asia. When we come back, we ask Bertrand how FCM is navigating these challenging times. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to The BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Welcome back. On The Breakfast Grill today, we have Bertrand Siley, Managing Director of FCM Travel Solutions Asia. Let's switch our attention from the market to the business itself, Bertrand. Now, the pandemic must have had a big toll on your business. Give us a sense how revenue was like in 2020 versus 2019.
Okay, that's a very interesting question. So in 2019, as a company, so we belong to Flight Centre Travel Group, which is one of the largest global travel consortia in the world. And in 2019, we actually did around 24 billion Australian dollar of business. So very significant, obviously. And it's fair to say that in 2020, we reduced it by more than half, which is obviously quite consequential. So we had to take very early decisions to make sure that we would survive. We actually knew from the beginning that this crisis would be quite a long one. We never underestimated the tsunami that was coming our way in terms of, you know, crisis and stuff. So from April 2020, we actually got together as an MD group and decided to do several things to make sure that the company would survive. The first thing, going back to our investors and telling them, listen, if it's a company you believe in, we need your support right now. And we need to basically, so we generated some bond and things, but I don't want to get into the specificity of it, but we managed to actually secure 1.2 billion of fresh cash to allow us to go through this. The consequence of that is that we also had to reduce our cost quite drastically, because investors would never give you money so that you waste it. So we managed to reduce our cost base by 75%. Listen to this. So we reduced it by 75%, which is absolutely crazy when you think of it.
I presume a lot of it came from staff cost reduction.
Yeah, obviously, because as you can imagine, HR costs for travel agencies probably the highest cost. The second one being more around the technology and things like that. So on the HR cost, yes, we. But luckily, I must admit, in a lot of markets, particularly in Europe or in Australia, we could benefit from a lot of government subsidies. You know, they created those new concept of furloughing people and stuff. So we could furlough a lot of people, but we're actually paid by the government instead of being paid by us. And that was a huge briefing space for us.
How extensive was that furlough? How many staff were affected?
Probably around 10,000 globally. Okay. Yeah. This is a lot of people. And in Asia, we kind of took a different angle. So depending on the markets we were in, because some markets gave us subsidies, some didn't. But as I said earlier, because markets like China picked up very fast, we actually didn't have to go as deep in this region. Our business was already pretty lean. And in markets like Malaysia, interestingly enough, we actually increased our staff because we kept recruiting to create some sort of support services for our global platforms and all that. So we used Malaysia as some sort of internal outsourcing capabilities for other markets because our cost of production in Malaysia is a bit lower than in other markets. So it was actually a good thing for the market. We grew our number of people in Malaysia during this time.
Cost is something you've had to deal with, and 75%. Besides staff, what other cost cuts did you do besides that?
Yeah, a lot of cost around technology. You know what I mentioned earlier about those large corporations doing some improvement of their workflows and automating non-productive tasks and things like that. We had to do that too. And that was a great journey because in the end, we use this time to automate much more our business, you know, implement some global robotic systems, for example, so that we have more and more untouched, you know, transactions and things like that. So a lot of investment on the tech side, which it's kind of funny because the moment you look at it from a global standpoint, focus on the right things to do, not only you reduce your cost of technology overall, but you also automate it so much better that you make your operations much more productive. So that was a bit of a win-win situation on that front.
So let's shift attention to refunds and cancellations. How are you managing your customers over the issue of refunds, particularly because I'm sure a lot of them have huge accounts with you, but they have not been utilized or travel now?
Yes, so that was very different from one airline to another to start with. And I have to say that here, travel agencies have been seen as the culprit in all of this, saying, oh, you guys are not refunding fast enough, or you guys are not giving us the money, but giving us some credits or vouchers or whatever you call it. The reality is that most of the time, we were kind of in between, and we had to wait for airlines to pay us back before we could refund the customers. But if you look at where we are now, I think we are clean with 100% of our accounts. Some of them, depending on the airlines, because some European airlines still kept, for example, the credit system. So we have some credits in our database. So as soon as the travelers are going to travel again, we will be able to use those credits, obviously.
Do you plan to sever relationships with any airlines that have not been compliant and not been forthcoming with refunds then?
The problem is that I cannot really say that airlines were not compliant. They also tried to do the best for their own survival, if you see what I mean. And it was such a wave of cancellation coming at the same time. But for some of them, should they have paid everything cash back, they would just have collapsed, just like right away. And it would not have been a good win-win situation for the travelers either, because then they don't even have an airline to fly with. So you know what? We actually play the partnership game with airlines. We need each other. And I think they've done quite a good job over this crisis to keep flying. And you know, when you think of it, Philip, when all of this started, most of the airlines stopped flying. If you remember those days where it was very hard to fly, to find a flight from Kuala Lumpur to anywhere else, or Singapore to anywhere else, or Hong Kong to anywhere else. And then they reinstated those flights. And as you know, the flights were not even half full, you know. So they had to do a huge sacrifice to actually keep people flying around and being relocated. And so we cannot really blame them very much. What we are trying to do is the best for our customers, making sure that we record all those credits and making sure that we use it as soon as all people go back to flying. So, yeah.
So as we move, and we've talked about the broader system and how the group has managed, I want to focus on Asia. Mm-hmm. What is the plan for expansion or growth in Asia? What strategy are you taking? Because your parent company, Flight Centre in Australia, they are behemoth in Australia, very much focused on retail leisure, of course with a corporate arm. But in Asia, you're quite corporate-centric. What is the strategy and plan for expansion in Southeast Asia particularly?
So that's a very good question. So today in Asia, we own 5 markets, China, Hong Kong, Malaysia, Singapore, and India. We are planning on expansion in the region. So we are working on some deals right now. I was telling you earlier that, you know, we are still surfing on the relationships that we built before COVID. And this is very much the case here to get our deals across. But I'm still hoping that I will be able to travel soon to get some of those accelerated. But it's definitely one of our targets. We work on the corporate side. I think we became, we just did a rebrand last year of FCM to reposition our brand in the corporate landscape. And what we want is to become the alternative. That means that we are the one that customers can go for, knowing that they will get something very different to their incumbent to a large extent. And I think this is a message that resonates very well with our customer base, but also our prospects, because they see in us things that they are not necessarily getting from the travel agencies that they are using right now. I spoke before about all those innovative solutions around technology, information, mobile apps. And those are things that we bring to our clientele that they like very much. And that put us in the forefront of the corporate travel industry right now. So we have a very strong position. Actually, even in a market like Malaysia, where we started our operation only 4 years ago, our growth has been quite amazing. And despite the COVID setback, we come back out of this in a very strong position in Malaysian market.
So Bertrand, last question. Is business class dead for flights under 3 hours?
Oh, that's a good one. And you take me by surprise here. So listen, what we've seen, interestingly, during this crisis, but again, as you know, for the international volumes, it's still very low. But a lot of companies have actually done the opposite. When they had an old economy policy, they tend to go more for business class policy for one good reason, safety. Because it's fair to say that when you sit on a business class cabin, there is less people around you, less interaction, and more, obviously, physical distance. So a lot of companies actually said, if you travel during these moments, you will be entitled to take a business class seat because of the safety on board. So listen, I don't know, Philippe. I don't think business class is dead at all. I think business class has a huge future. As you know, a lot of airlines have been invested massively to revamp their business class cabins despite the crisis. So clearly they see something out of it. So, you might still be able to enjoy your glass of champagne after all of this.
Bertrand, I hope you're right. On The Breakfast Grill today, we have with us Bertrand Saleh, Managing Director of FCM Travel Solutions Asia. I'm Philip C, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.